Hello everyone and welcome to JFG Tonight. Do we have sound now? Tuttle Grim says I have sound after refresh. How they say, come on! The sound! The sound is important on the stream. It seems that people are reporting the sound is on now. Let me hear myself to make sure. Grim says I have sound.
Yes.
Okay, we have sound. How are you doing, guys? We will be talking about the Matt Walsh documentary, What is a Woman? Excellent documentary. I know that it's kind of boring and it doesn't bring anything new or even does the correct argument biologically. But the reason I say it's still excellent and you should watch it, I think you'll enjoy it, is that it is it catches some of the leftists incapable of providing an answer. And I think it's a miracle in the current context that these leftists have accepted to speak to Matt Walsh, knowing everything that we've gone through on the internet. I think it's pretty clear on the side of the left that the tactic is do not engage. Do not engage with any critic. Do not even consider the critics as existing. And just keep going forward with your football strategy. You take the football and you just drive forward. I think back in 2017, the left had a different attitude. That's why blood sports were allowed to exist and we could have leftists and dunk on them all night. But these days are over and it must be for any person who has shown up in this documentary. I'm afraid that Matt Walsh must have contacted maybe 50, maybe 100 before even one would accept. And the fact that he was able to put it off, that we have a sociology kind of professor in the social sciences who has a gay kind of way of acting. The fact that this guy can be ridiculed on camera, being a professor of whatever at Tennessee University or whatever crap he is at, that's good. The fact that we can have a kind of feminist therapist, that's good, who shows up. And then we have a medical doctor who does puberty blocking with young people. We even have a surgeon who has operated a vaginoplasty onto a 16-year-old. The fact that we have this combination of the four axes, if you will, of intervention from psychology, therapy, and academia to doctors and surgeons, that is exceptional. And you have to give credit to Matt Walsh. Somehow he pulled it off, a little bit like Ali J. You know how Ali J was succeeding at getting known personalities scheduled in his interviews, and then he was showing up and making a circus out of it. Somehow Matt Walsh has understood what to say to these people that they would accept showing up. The reason I say What is a Woman is incomplete is that it doesn't give the proper biological response. you know, one glaring omission of this documentary is that we don't even have an answer to what is a woman. We are bound to adhere to the kind of comedic performance at the end where Matt Walsh, spoiler alert by the way, where Matt Walsh goes to see his own wife after having traveled the world in search of an answer. And his own wife says, well, a woman is a human female. A human adult female who needs help opening this. And she gives him a pickle pot that he has to open, defining the male-female dichotomy. Okay, a little joke at the end. Sure, it's poorly acted and it's ridiculous. But the problem is that nowhere in this documentary is there a biologist answering the very simple question, what is a woman? To answer what is a woman, you need to understand a couple of things, because people will get to the first layer, which is, it's a human female. Now, you got the two elements here when you say this, but you have to understand two things for this definition to make sense and for people to understand that this is not a social construct. human female. What is a human? What is a species? And why do we get to classify the human beings as a species? And female, what are sexual species? Why is sex existing at all? Those two answers have not been provided in the documentary What is a Woman? It would have been so much better if it could educate people on basic biology stuff, but this is what happens when you have this kind of center-right, Christ-cuck type of thing, where there are probably so much cucks to Christianity that they fail at seeing that the fundamental answer they're looking for is available within biology, and you have to accept evolution in the first place. I'm not saying that Matt Walsh is an evolution denial, but unfortunately, I think he has produced this video for a crowd that he expected would be filled with Christians, and because it would be filled with Christians, I think he didn't want to roughen some feathers. He didn't want to say the wrong things, and he decided to make a whole documentary about what is a woman and never have the evolutionary answer in it. So here's the evolutionary answer. Here's what Matt Walsh could have taken 30 seconds of his documentary to say. Humans are a species, and species develop from common ancestors because there is a repeated act of reproduction that happens between individuals, but not at equal rates between all of the group. In other words, when the common ancestor gives birth to brothers and sisters, and then young little cousins, and then great-grand cousins, etc., there is a point at which the closer ones, the part of the tree, starts reproducing together, but less with the other part of the tree. And this part of the tree starts reproducing together, but less with that part of the tree. And then you have a split. And simply out of the fact that they reproduce more often together, and there's genetic drift, and there's mutations that happen in this group and not this group, and there's selection that happens to this group and not this group, you end up having a differentiation that builds up in the groups that don't end up having sex at all, or they end up having less sex together. And here you have the process of speciation. And the first step for speciation is basically subspeciation, basically the development of populations with different different frequencies of genes in their genome, as opposed to some other group. In humans, in the human species, there is already a process of subspeciation in the sense that there are genes that are totally associated or with high certainty associated with an African ancestry and genes that are associated with a European ancestry. That's because the Europeans had more sex between one another than they had with the Africans. So now you know what a species is. It's a cluster in the patterns of sexual interaction such that a differentiation builds up, and eventually the differentiation is big enough that we end up calling it a species. But that differentiation exists independent of the label. You know, human is not a social construct. It's a reality of nature. The same reality that makes two things distinguished from each other in any natural setting. The stable is different from the air around it, and the air around it is different from the air that you would get in Australia or Africa. So two things are different because they are identifiably distinct. There's a difference that's physical. That's how you end up having humans separated from the rest of the animal world. That's why you end up having any species. One moment. All right. Now we have defined what a human is. And we need to know what a sexual species is. And then in sexual species, there are... Sorry, I'm... Sorry, I have my throat ache echoing still up to today. Then in sexual species, you could think of two types of sexual species, and we are one. You could think of sexual species as being optional meiosis, and that's the case for mushrooms. Mushrooms have a different path toward the future. They can create a new generation by the mitosis process, or they can create a new generation by the meiosis process. Mitosis being the only option for bacteria. So mitosis is the process by which a bacteria makes a copy of its old genome, then splits in two. A copy goes into one and the original goes into the other. And then you have two babies basically from an original creature, in this case, a bacteria. Mushrooms can do that when they reproduce through mitosis. But mushrooms also have a second option, which is to give only half of their genome rather than make a copy. Make the copy, but only give half of your genome and combine it with another that gives the equivalent half. And when they're paired together, you end up having a diploid cell, a cell that contains two copies of the same genome, if you will. But on each of the copies, there is a different history of mutation. In one copy, you end up having the genes of either the grandfather or the grandmother on the male side. And on the other copy, you carry the grandfather or the grandmother's genes on the female side. So, someone wants me to swallow semen as a solution to my throat ache. Here, I will ban you because I think you are providing misinformation. Semen, there is no evidence that it cures throat aches in males. So, a diploid organism is one that carries two copies of the gene. And you could ask yourself, why do we have diploid organisms? Why would you care about having two copies? And the question is up, but certainly we can think of many reasons. It's extremely good to have two copies that way. First, it's just good from a redundancy perspective. Think about how many genetic disorders are recessive. If you had only one copy of the gene, you would automatically inherit from the recessive genetic disorder. But if you have the other copy that's functional, you survive. So it might be just redundancy would be enough to justify why certain organisms evolve to be diploid. But I think that the great advantage for it comes from another radical advantage, not just redundancy. Because you could build redundancy without sexual selection. And clearly, the diploid organisms have trended toward using sexual opportunities as much as they could. So there's something very good about pairing your genes with another and sacrificing half of your genes. And the reasons here are first, the question of solidarity with defective genes. If you can wash away 50% of your genetic partners across the generations, you may be in a much better situation than a bacteria who's always stuck with the bad genes. The bacteria has no way to filter out the wrong, filter out the bad. So in a way, it's evolution speeded up and detached from the individual. That's what happens under sexual meiosis. It's because you repair your genes with new partners every generation, you can get rid of the bad ones without dying. The problem of the bacteria is that each of the genes in the genome are fatally linked to any bad gene that's in there. Of course, Dick Echado says meplasmids. I'm putting on the side for now the idea that, yes, bacteria have their own way of changing their genome and detaching from the genome, but it's not the main way of reproduction for a bacteria. It's an option. It's kind of a virus system, but it's not as good as sexual reassortment, which occurs on 50% of the genome every single generation. So now you know what a species is and you know what a sexual species is. The last thing to answer the question, what is a woman, is to understand that in certain sexual species, the challenges of the environment are big enough that it's good to have different characteristics in the male and different characteristics in the female. And it all starts around, first and foremost, the main differentiation that life cannot escape from, which is that the female is the producer of the egg, and in most species, therefore, the carrier of the baby. Some exceptions exist, doesn't matter. When that happens in a species, the female has a fundamentally different evolutionary outlook into the future and into her own life. The female has a strategy that's best for her, and the male has a strategy that's best for him. Very often it will revolve around these different sexes will end up performing better in the environment with different cognitive behaviors, different physiological processes, and something like muscle force will be more needed on the male side, perhaps because they have more of a role of provider to play to the female, whereas the female has less of a role of a provider to play toward the male, and will anyways stay local, stay into the tribe, stay into the city, because she will be handicapped by bearing a baby every 9 months. For this reason, you have sexual differentiation that happens, sexual dimorphism, where the genes, even the same gene, finding itself in a woman or finding itself of a man in a man, will see different strategy having to be deployed to survive. And there you have the distinction rising in the apes and monkeys, where our particular circumstances demanded males that were competitive, males that were honorable, males that were sharing information properly and telling the truth, and men who were more muscular, more hunter type, more travelers, and females who were less travelers, less muscled, more equipped to carry babies and to feed them with boobs. And you have here the entire, and of course the cognitive differences which arise, which make it so that the vast majority of female and male will want and desire different things from life. And you end up with woman and man. And it really doesn't matter if some women feel like a man, some men feel like a woman, or even if some of their behaviors are kind of overlapping with the other sex distribution. The fact is, evolution pushes for a good enough differentiation that addresses most of the environmental challenges that apply to the human family. Evolution is not perfect, evolution has accidents, and most importantly, evolution doesn't care about distinguishing males and females per se. It cares about doing it in a world where that distinction is necessary. And that's why you end up with men and women being different. Now, I know that I've laid it out on more than 30 seconds, but don't tell me what I laid out here could not make it into 30 seconds of Matt Walsh documentary. Yet it is a documentary where the most sensical intervention in this documentary is when he goes to Africa. And this is stunning. He goes into a tribe in Africa, and credit to Matt Walsh for taking for taking this extreme measure, you know, paying the plane ticket, because it really embellishes the documentary. Because he's going with a random, just super specialized tribe of Africa where they have their tradition, their women are dressed in a certain way, they're outstanding in line. And he just confronts these African guys with the woke stuff from America. And he's like, so can a man become a woman? And they're like, no, we never heard of this. It was so relieving emotionally to see there are still humans out there who don't have to suffer through the stupidity of the wokeness of the modern time. I mean, these guys are just hunting and they're throwing spears, and it's like, okay, let's talk to Matt Walsh. And they had a translator so that they could understand what Matt Walsh was saying. Absolutely beautiful moment of this documentary where these guys are, no, we've never heard of this happening, a man becoming a woman. And the first question that they, when they start understanding the phenomenon and the claims of Matt Walsh, the first thing they go to is, well, your man who's a woman, is he bearing babies? Is he delivering babies? And Matt Walsh is like, no, I don't think he is. And they're like, oh, well, that's not a woman. In a way, Matt Walsh has successfully patched the lack of biological context in this documentary by just this happenstance African remark, which happens to be, yes, it's a fundamental definition. It's a fundamental aspect of the definition of a woman. She must be producing the egg. Batty Moom says, JF Cuff remind of my mother. Mother had cholera and died when I was a boy. Well, hopefully I don't repeat the experience and traumatize you. Sorry to hear that this happened, but I don't think I have cholera. Cracked Lobster says, JF, keep JF out of my sexual selection. Okay, well, I am not available on the market right now. Silver Spider says, yeah, JF, but then people evolved brains that get very confused about these topics. Exactly. And we should see the wokeness stuff as being simply this, an overshoot of intellectualization. And I think when he introduces the professor from the University of Tennessee or whatever, it's really great because here's a gay guy who doesn't know what he's talking about. And he's at some point, Matt Walsh starts playing violin music. It's like, and the guy keeps speaking, and these people don't even know what they're saying, the meaning of what they're saying. And all of them are all blocking at the question, what is a woman? And almost all of the leftist interventions in this movie, they all end up trying to cancel the interview, but they all fail because they're like, okay, it's the end of the interview. But somehow Matt Walsh succeeds at keeping them in the conversation. And he's like, well, what? You don't want to answer questions about the drugs you give to children? And the girl is like, no, it's just that you're being insensitive. And somehow they detect Matt Walsh as insensitive for merely, you should see the minimal amount of stuff he has to say before they try to cancel the interview. It's like Matt Walsh is saying, well, what is a woman? Like, if you were, you're not a cat, right? How do you know you're not a cat? And the girl is already offended. And she goes away. Oh, that was a bad idea. That was a girl on the street. Then the sociology professor starts saying, well, you are talking in a way that trans people may not feel safe. That's also a critique that he gets from one of the doctors. He talks to Ted Lieu, the Democrat candidate, the Democrat whatever representative. And Ted Lieu just... Matt Walsh comes in and says, so you have this law that will allow transgender people in the opposite sex bathroom. Some people find this controversial. What do you think about it? And Tedlier already is offended and stops the interview. He's like, at first he tries to mumble a response. He says, well, you know, given that we're going to save Trent's lives with this bill, I don't know why you would... we're trying to stop violence against trans people and you're focusing on the bathroom issue. It's stunning to me. And he leaves. And the aide of Tedlier and Matt Walsh is like, but I just wanted to know, what is a woman? And the aide of Tedlier says to him, you won't know what it is. That is so amazing to see the leftist caught in not being able to answer. And in the end, all these people want to have the self-defined view of what is a woman. It's like, what is a woman? Well, it's whatever a woman wants to identify as and whatever she chooses to define as being a woman. So they're really in the mind, in the my feelings are all that matters. So it's impossible with these people to have a discussion of facts of biology, and they're helpless. There's no way to get them out of their fundamental beliefs. Excellent documentary. You should watch it. If you would like to support the show, use the dollar button in the regular chat. Odyssey is my favorite platform for super chats. It's the right way to support the show. Alternatively, you can always use Entropy also. The link to Entropy is in the description below. So yes, that's very interestingly, we get to hear from an adult who has transitioned and who regrets it, who had a false penis sculpted out of skin that they have removed from his arm. It's a woman who wanted to become a man and who now kind of looks like a somewhat man, and who has children, and somehow at the age of 40 got convinced by the LGBT propaganda and now regrets it. So this person finds themselves with all sorts of medical problems, and there's no one to help them. And I think it exposes well the whole business aspect of this also. There's just so much money to be made with all these social workers, the psychologist, the therapist, the doctor, the surgeon, all of it covered by insurance. It's a whole system of crap inducement, you know. It just creates so much suffering, and no one is there at the end to collect the suffering. See, only the person who makes the switch, the surgery, will end up having to collect the suffering. All of these people are there for helping the transition. Ariel Suarez says, another transition regret, damn. Oh, well, I think we're not even at peak transition regret, because it's such an avant-garde, edgy surgery and all. It's when those surgeries would have become at their maximum common that 7 years, 10 years later, you're going to have the most suffering in people who regret it. So if we were peak trans last year, we're going to be peak trans regrets in 7 to 10 years from now. That would be in 2032. Because they also talk about data that comes from a scientific study that establishes that the peak suicide rate for transitioning trans people is 7 to 10 years after the surgery, after the transition experience. So, I mean, that is something that flies in the face of all these, including the lady that I featured on the thumbnail, all these promoters of this process. And she's like, yeah, I just want to help. Matt Walsh, I don't like the way you speak about this, because you don't introduce the concept properly, that I'm trying to help children. But have you considered the possibility that you may be doing more harm than good? No question that there are some children out there who have a big problem around gender. But we're doing everything to amplify this problem and make it into this collective insanity that forces people's speech. Oh yeah, and there's Jordan Peterson also at the end of the documentary who says, yeah, you know, there are some males that may look more like females or feel more like female. What are we going to do about it? Carve them up? That's a good question. That's what people will be asking in 20, 50 years from now when they look back at the current days and see how just horrible, misinformed humans can walk into something that they don't know the consequences of. We Are the West says, JF, add a trans person as a guest on TPS. It would be interesting to know what this person is doing now. I think I've had a couple of them. There was one who had the self done the surgery. That was a bizarre experience. Firestarter says, has JF ever talked to Blair White? I didn't know. Was she at some point, maybe she joined a Bloodsport moment where I may have been on there, but I don't remember doing a, you know, I don't think I've talked to her one-to-one. Amazon implements invitation-based ordering for high-demand items. Amazon is going to be launching a new invite-based ordering experience for products that are in high demand but are tough to get to due to limited supply. So this will start with PlayStation 5 and Xbox Series game consoles. I've totally left the world of console gaming, so I don't know about this, but apparently these things are so constantly in shortage that they will have a system where you basically line up and you wait for, you get an invite, and because they know you're interested in it, and you get to line up first for getting those when they're ready. FDA advisors to weigh risk and benefits of Novavax COVID-19 vaccine. This had been a question that was repeatedly asked to me back in the days where people were scared about the novelty of the mRNA vaccine. So we now have the results from the Novavax vaccine, which instead of injecting the RNA, injects the protein, the spike protein directly. And the results are, it has the exact same effect, side effects as the mRNA. It ends up with pericarditis, myocarditis. So we have to seriously consider the possibility that the mRNA technology is not causing the heart issues itself. It is somehow the spike protein of the virus, of the coronavirus, and the way they've reworked it and redesigned it for the vaccine, that is a bad agent for your heart. That is my conclusion, because if you get the exact same side effect profile when you do it with a mRNA vaccine and when you do it with the protein directly, then it has nothing to do with the invasion of your cell by the mRNA. It has everything to do with that protein being present in your blood flow. So, personally, I will not be taking the Novavax. I've already escaped death by not taking the mRNA vaccine. There's no reason for me not to continue on this winning streak. Policy push against fossil fuels means will never be another refinery built in the U.S., Chevron CEO says. That's the problem under a Democrat administration. They're actually happy that the gas price is increasing. It kind of, I think it's part of their plan. Somehow they must have positioned their business strategy and link with this. And it's also in line with the environmentalist interests. So basically, as long as we have Democrats ruling this country, there won't be re-drilling or new developments in oil production. They're actually happy about what's happening right now. Recession, prices, and the final crack-up boom. That's an interesting take because it's a look at why before a big economic crash, you have very often a super spike in prices. And they say the super spike has not yet happened. We would basically see a rise of stock markets and various things, various assets, suddenly in the next few months. And that's because just before a recession, people are suddenly starting to fear holding money. They are trying to buy assets that will help them survive the recession, including houses. So that's why they expect a price peak in houses. Even if we've seen a little drop, they expect this last crack-up boom that they call the final crack-up boom. The idea that at the very end, just before it's the total crash, people are in urge of obtaining the necessities to survive. DK Shadow says, what about crypto? Yeah, I mean, it's going to be hard to determine, is crypto treated as an asset as part of this crack boom up, or is it treated as a kind of reserve of money? That will determine what happens to crypto. I think anything can happen with crypto within the next year. It's going to go one way or the other. What we know is that at the next halvening, it's going to go back up crazily again. Thomas says, JF, how did plants evolve without needing a brain? Well, plants just demonstrate that just how much you don't need a brain if you have the other processes that... So why did plants evolve not to need a brain? Well, what is a brain? If you go fundamentally, the first brains, the first neural connection, happened in something like an anemone, like an invertebrate that was just wiggling on the bottom of the ocean. And so the anemone just feels something touching it, wiggles, goes to the next spot, and probably does so not only in response to sensory touch, but also just to explore the environment and to get to a place where it can filter and eat more stuff. So plants did not have this step in their evolution. So you can interpret it as two reasons. Well, you can see the landscape of food for plants not being worth it. So maybe for animals, somehow, the environment was what was their food. The environment was distributing it so irregularly and so differentially across places that it was worth it to jump from this place to this place. Apparently, the plants, being on this spot or being on the next spot, maybe the differential that you would gain is not interesting enough for a plant. From the perspective of a plant, the soil here or the soil there, and is there any way really that the plant could tell in advance that the soil is better there? And if the soil is better there, there'd probably be other plants already consuming that soil. So basically, the plant has one certainty. It's alive, and it's alive in its current place. And therefore, going to another place... Now, look at a strawberry. I was looking today at my greenhouse, the way the strawberries are spreading. The strawberry is basically making a movement. It's an intergenerational movement. The strawberry elongates a branch, gives birth to a fruit, a strawberry fruit, and plants a new version of itself, a baby, maybe one foot away from the original plant. So you can make the case that the ensemble of processes that do this in the strawberry plant and in so many other plants are like a locomotor control brain. It's not a single center for decision making. It's the entirety of the processes in the stem and the branches and the leaves and the fruit. But ultimately, it sums up. Basically, strawberries are intergenerationally walking. And you have to boil it down in your head to why did animals need to walk within generations, whereas plants walk mostly across generations. Now, plants also have mechanism not to walk, but they have mechanism to throw a branch, like a tomato plant will do that. Throw a branch, fall, create new roots where the point of contact with the soil happen, and then elongate from there. So basically, tomato plants walk also, and you could see the system of processes that lead to it as being a brain, although it's not a single organ. So, that being said, it's true that the animals, even if you can make the case that plants are walking, the animals have something about their walk that is at a much faster pace. You know, it happens within seconds. And then the question is, why did the animals need to walk within seconds when the plants can afford walking over long periods of time? It boils down to nutrient differential, sensory to nutrient signaling. That is, to what extent can I tell from the environment that the nutrients are there? The plants really is going at random. The plants doesn't have a way, like the tomato plants, I don't know that they have a way to spot the direction they want to explore. They will do it for the sun, but I don't know that they could do it for the soil. So they will reorient toward the sun, but they will not reorient to find a better soil. They will find better soil basically at random. Yeah, so it's the ensemble of these circumstances that lead a species to need a brain or not need a brain. Because the brain ultimately is a sensory to matter processor. It's what do I see and what do I do then? It seems that for animals, this combination, what do I see and what do I do, was much more important at a much faster pace, at a much higher resolution than it ever was with the plants. Covey says, Jeff, how can one have an orgasm without the correct organ? In men, it's the penis, they have them, so food. It's not even clear to me that trans people, they will tell you that trans people can experience orgasms with their reconnected new sexual-like organ. I think that there is a practice in the surgeons in this domain where they will be careful about keeping the nervous connections that will lead to the male organ, the sensation connection, and they will re-solder it basically to the female organ that they're producing. So in a way, touch experience is supposed to be preserved to some extent. But the reality that you hear from so many of them is that their new organ, their new appearance of a sexual organ comes with so much medical troubles that it is very long before they can enjoy anything around sex because there are problems of smell. I think one of the biggest complaints is that the recreated vagina, among others, and the recreated penis appear to be extremely smelly. Yeah, so can they have an orgasm at some point? Well, yeah, you can have an orgasm without much touching experience, you know. But then there's the question of the female orgasm and the male orgasm. I feel that the male orgasm is much more defined, much more precise, and, you know, it's correlated with an observable. the female orgasm can be correlated with observables like some sort of contraction of the vagina, and but it doesn't have to. So I think we are in very complex, loose territory here. Firestarters, and I have a super chat. I want to get to it, but let me answer Firestarter. Firestarter, did you hear about the murdered family in Centerville, Texas? A Mexican cartel member escapes prison and kills a whole white family. I don't think the mainstream news want to talk about it. I think I've seen it on 4chan. Yeah, but I've not kept it up, so it was not part of my coverage today. But yeah, it's we hear so many of those stories. It seems to be a regular occurrence. CLJ sends a super chat. He says, Papa JF, could you do a review of the book An Empirical Introduction to Youth? An Empirical Introduction to Youth. Is it... Who wrote this? I think, yeah, it's featured in the... oh, man. It's featured in the Matt Walsh documentary. And I think it's that book of leftists, like an old leftist, was experiencing on people's sexuality when they were children, revealing the maturity of young people and why the mainstream gets it wrong. Holy shit. Basically a pedo book. Am I willing to review this? It's kind of grim, honestly. If you tell me, CLJ, that you have a feeling that there is some intellectual interest in reviewing this, I can. But it looks like just a pedo book, okay? So, do I want to make a show about a pedo book? Like, these people were taking grooming to another level. I mean, the groomers of today, they're kind of trying to be subtle about it. They're trying to build excuses for what they do. These guys were just taking twins, and as Matt Walsh talks about it in the documentary, these guys were taking two twin boys and trying to convince one of the twins that they were a female, and the two twins end up dead, one in I don't know in which circumstance, the other, which they tried to convince he was a female, ended up committing suicide. I mean, I can review this book. My impression is that there's going to be nothing interesting in it, and throughout each sentence, I'll be like, they're taking this for granted. They're pushing an ideology. But yeah, I can review it if you tell me you would enjoy that show. Major turning point, U.S. housing inventory rises for the first time since 2019. So there was less and less houses available on the market. But for now, there are more houses showing up. However, this hasn't reflected in the prices yet. but there may be some future ahead where home ownership becomes possible again for the poor or the middle class, let's say, because at this point I think it's hard to get a house even for the middle class. Restaurants adding inflation fees amid razor thin margins. So people have seen temporary inflation fee on their restaurant bill, $2. Kitchen appreciation fee, $9. A 4% supply chain charge. I asked the restaurant what this fee was for and was told the wellness fee pays for employees' access to a mental health hotline for depression and suicide. Question: do I lower my tip by 3% since I'm now paying for mental health for the server? Oh my god, the system is getting squeezed, and I can't see economic activity being healthy in these circumstances. I think the system is going to crash because the businesses have to charge too high of a price, people won't be able to afford it, so there won't be any business. So it will all kill the business activity, and we have seen just the beginning of the trouble. They talk about a recession to start this quarter or early third quarter, a little more drop of the activity and value, and we'll be officially in a recession, could be this year. Pay to play looms for the rest of us. They're describing the problem that in the coming economy, people will have options to pay more to get the service that we used to get for free. It's like things will be so unavailable, but some people will say, oh, what about I pay $80 more for it? And they'll end up having it. They're describing, for example, passports, you know. Oh, you can get your you can do your passport application the normal way, and it's going to take 6 months, or you can do the expedited filing, and you pay $200 more, but you'll get it in 4 weeks. That kind of stuff, they say, will become more and more common in the coming economy. Thomas says, JF, is there any possibility that a man can actually become a woman through some kind of lifelong psychological and physical abuse program that the CIA know about? No. There is an in-principle possibility. Here's what it involves. So you're born a man. You are XY in your chromosomes. We could make a CRISPR virus that goes to infect every cell of your body, changes the Y part of your chromosome, and I say CRISPR, it probably would be more than CRISPR, it would be like a gene delivery system of some kind. Remove the Y part, perhaps drops a new X component, or perhaps just copies the X that's already there, the X chromosome. And then you are XX in all cells of your body. And you can go on from there to becoming a woman. And if you've done that early enough in the life of the person, they should end up developing a female puberty. They might end up being capable of carrying a baby and giving birth to an actual baby with their egg from a combination with some sperm. There you would have become a female. Now, we certainly are not there yet, because gene delivery of that kind in all cells of the body is not achievable at this moment. But in principle, that would be how you turn a man into a woman. And yes, it's possible, but I wouldn't do it. Claude, because then there's going to be all sorts of technical issues. You will eventually find out, oh my God, the body was developing in a way that this, for example, this or that will never get fixed. Like, you could have, for example, a different shoulder structure in the young kids, even before they have started their puberty, and then the new body with the new XX chromosome doesn't know how to handle that shoulder structure. But certainly that method that I just described would be the least traumatic compared to, you know, hormones, because hormones and surgery, this is all extremely imperfect. It's like there's a million ways in which it can go wrong. There would be ways with which it can go wrong also with the genetic therapy that I described. But they would probably be easier to control, and they would probably go more the way of the natural, because you would basically be effectively not just fooling the body into believing it's a woman, you would be changing it for real into a woman. Claudio Lara says, it's not about that, lol. It's more like a conspiracy theory about how high schools were founded. The US education system is massively exploitative and was founded by the ruling classes against the will of the people. I'll type at the author come to one of his live streams to speak about it. You say an empirical introduction to youth? Let's see the description on Amazon. Everyone has heard that we only use 10% of our brain is a myth perpetuated by Hollywood. Here we add another myth to the pile, that the brain develops until the age of 25. This groundbreaking new work exposes the institution of science as unfaithful to its own data, existing in a subverted state subordinate to the political aspirations of the class that controls it. Bronski tears the narrative apart piece by piece, ripping through and debunking every major writing that supports the myth of the teen brain. In addition, he shows that the ideology regarding youth, which exists today, is totally ahistorical, and that the US education system is massively exploitative and was founded by the ruling class against the will of the people. The work's culminating thesis is that the class which resides at the top of the education system, the paid brains of the rich, have proliferated wrong ideas about youth in order to strengthen their influence over the minds of young, their pocketbooks, and the pocketbooks of their families. No dogma regarding contemporary youth survives this devastating, piercing work. It is a must-read for anyone who wants to be knowledgeable on youth development and education. Anyone who has not read it is officially behind the times as of this moment. Okay. Well, this is as you describe it, so it's not as I describe it, but isn't it the case that in the Matt Walsh documentary they talk about a certain Bronski? Wouldn't that be this author? Maybe I misremember. I know there's a couple of books in the documentary. It seemed to me that one of them was written by Bronski. But perhaps I'm mistaking whose Bronski it is, but I think I've seen this cover. I think I've seen this cover in the Matt Walsh documentary. Fractal Man sends a super chat. He says, I'm a bit behind, but I think I have found a good way to explain the silliness of gender reassignment surgery. What would you say if someone wanted to amputate their perfectly healthy arm? Should they have a psych evaluation? What would you say about a doctor that would perform the surgery? Yeah, I mean, these parallels have been done again and again before, because there's you know, the family of psychiatric disorders that are called dysphoria. There's so many things in there. There's people who are convinced they're blind. There's people who dream to be blind because they somehow they like the culture of blind people. And so, some people will go to the point of destroying their own eyes to become blind, just out of the desire of being in this blind community. And there are, yes, people who feel that their arms is not theirs, and it's because of defects in the receptive part of the brain for sensory signals. So yes, the dysphoria, that's why you hear leftists use the word gender dysphoria less and less. It's because it shows a dirty reality about this, which is it's dysphoria means kind of beside the track of reality. You are convinced of an idea that is beside the track of reality. And of all the dysphoria, the only case in which we are actively pursuing the pursuit of the dysphoria rather than the pursuit of reality is the gender dysphoria. Why is it? Should we start amputating arms on demand? You are correct. Some random bloke sends a super chat. Thank you so much for supporting the show. He says, hey, JF, did you see the extreme right Israeli settlers marching through Jerusalem, all chanting death to Arabs? I haven't recently, but they've been doing this, I think, for a while. I haven't done so recently. Claudio Lara says, JF, I think the author of this book would be considered a transphobe and homophobe by the left, lol. Okay, well, it's bizarre how he's talking about the myth of children. That seems pedo to me. I have my pedo alert, my pedo radar is beeping, okay? But I can give it a try. You know what, since there's so much confusion, the Kindle is for sales at $5, I'll buy it. Here, I'll bookmark this and I'll make a show about it if there's anything interesting. But are you trying to troll me? Are you trying to get me to read pedo literature? And trying to sell it as something else? I don't know. Yellen throws Biden under the bus on runaway inflation. She wanted the 1.9 trillion stimulus cut by a third. So Janet Yellen putting it on the back of too much government expenses. But she's the one making the monetary policy. Russia threatens to strike the West if US supplied rockets hit its territory. One of President Putin's closest allies has warned that Moscow could target Western cities if Ukraine uses rocket systems supplied by the United States to carry out strikes on Russian territory. The dire warning was given by close top Putin ally Dmitry Medvedev. If, God forbid, these weapons are used against Russian territory, then our armed forces will have no other choice but to strike decision-making centers. Of course, it needs to be understood that the final decision-making centers in this case, unfortunately, are not located on the territory of Kiev. So is he talking about Washington, D.C.? This is going to be interesting, not now, because I'm sure there will not be a strike on Russian territory. I mean, I'd be surprised. I'm not sure. But I'd be surprised if the U.S. was to do this. But where it will be interesting is how Russia will annex these territories and say, all right, Crimea is now us. DPR is now ours. LPR is now ours. Mariupol is now ours. And then it's going to become, well, if the Ukrainians strike on these territories, will the Russian Federation consider that Russia has been struck by these missiles? That's where it's going to become interesting, but it's going to take a while before we get there. The Iranians are saying, I had covered this very quickly, I had said the Iranians were reported to have captured some oil tank boats. And the Iranians are saying they stole Iran's oil on the coast of Greece, then brave Iranians retaliated and confiscated the enemy's oil tankers. But in the mainstream media's propaganda, Iran is accused of theft. Who's the thief? You who stole our oil or us who took it back? So it seems that it's more complex than what the coverage was leading us to believe the other day. The Iranians are considering that they were stolen some oil, and so they're taking back some oil. And we hear that the US has also intercepted, I believe, some of these boats that were headed toward Venezuela. I don't know why we're holding this country in poverty and with these sanctions and everything. We shouldn't do this. The war situation in Ukraine looks like this. We have two important fronts. On the one side, there are Ukrainian aviation that conduces airstrikes, pushing back here on the front line held by the Russians. And we have lots of Russian activity against the same center that we were talking about, Severodonetsk here, and different axis of bombardment behind it. So it's still the same situation. As a last news item, I was fascinated by this. I didn't know about this at all. The Pole News Network reports 18 years ago today, the world learned what happens when a good man is pushed too far. So the man would be this guy. And here's his story. Sit down, kids, and let me tell you a tale about a reasonable man driven to do unreasonable things. Marvin He Mayer was a man who owned a muffler shop in Granby, Colorado. The city council ordained to approve the construction of a concrete factory. in the lot across from Marvin's shop. In the process, this blocked the only access road to the muffler shop. Marvin petitioned to stop the construction to no avail. He petitioned to construct a new access road and even bought the heavy machinery to do so himself. Denied. The concrete factory went up in disregard to the ramifications on Marvin's business. To add insult to the injury, the factory construction disconnected the muffler shop from the city sewage lines. An indifferent city government then chose to fine Marvin for this. His business and livelihood were in ruin. Rather than lie down and die, Marvin chose to fight back. Over the course of a year and a half, Marvin secretly outfitted the bulldozer he bought to save his business with 3-foot-thick steel, 3-foot, and concrete armor, camera systems, and enclosed bulletproof glass. He then, on June 4th, Marvin lowered the armored shell over top of himself, entombing himself inside the killdozer to make his last stand. He burst forth from the walls of his muffler shop and straight into the concrete factory that ruined his business. Over the course of the next several hours, Marvin drove his killdozer through 13 buildings owned by those officials that had wronged him, including the city council building itself. SWAT teams swarmed the dozer, but it proved immune to small arms fire and even explosives. Another piece of heavy machinery was even brought out to fight the killdozer, but it too fell to the dozer's righteous fury. In the end, Marvin's killdozer became trapped in one of the buildings it was built to destroy. Marvin chose to take his life, the only life he took that day. Wow. This guy killed no one in the process, just seeded great amounts of wreckage. And this is a photo of the killdozer from the news back then. 18 years ago, this killdozer has destroyed a whole town with more than a dozen buildings, apparently, because of an issue where a city was careless in constraining a man out of his legitimate property and life. Well, I don't know what to say. Fascinating story. Fascinating story. Thomas says, JF, is a civilization possible without agriculture? Depends on what you define as a civilization. By some standard, you could consider ant colonies as a civilization. So if your standards are that there is communication, multiple individuals, coordination, and development together, then the ant colonies qualify as a civilization, and they do not have agriculture. Although you'll find some ants sometimes farming aphids, you know. I think it's that there are certainly species of ants that don't do that. So then the answer to your question is yes, civilization is possible without agriculture. Then you can ask, well, okay, but I'm not talking about ants. I'm talking about technologically advanced civilization. And then then the answer is probably yes. There's probably other ways than farming plants that can sustain a civilization. That doesn't mean that agriculture in humans wasn't a causal factor in us becoming an advanced civilization. Certainly there's something in that mass production that becomes possible under agriculture that makes it probably likely or perhaps potentially possible to become a technologically advanced civilization. But I'm sure if you allow me to think of a different planet with different parameters, I would be surprised if it was necessary. That is my view on your question. Thank you so much for all of the donors who have sent super chats tonight and for all of those who support us through Subscribestar and Patreon. By the way, we should schedule this this Patreon hangout. Let's make our Patreon hangout a Friday. Friday. Let's make it a Sunday, the 12th. Patreon and Subscribestar hangout. If you want to be part of it, it's going to be at 9 p.m. Eastern Time on Sunday, the 12th. And you have to be at the $20 level on Subscribestar or Patreon. And by the way, I've rescheduled the debate about moral nihilism. It will be on Tuesday, the 7th. That's in 3 days from now. I will see you there. John Drake says, what time did the show start tonight? The show always starts at 7 p.m. Eastern Time, except when it doesn't. Thomas says, Jeff, imagine breeding tigers like pit bulls were bred. Okay.